Hi, everybody. This is Phil the Issues Guy from issuesprogram.com and Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Do you like television? Do you like talking about television? Do you have problems and can't sleep at night? If you any of those things are true, come on down and join Phil the Issues Guy on YouTube. Phil's recap and review, or check out issuesprogram.com to check out our stuff. Basically, what we do is we talk a lot about television, some movies, but mainly television. We do post-episode recaps, live viewings, drunk commentary games, and just general analysis. So if you love television, you don't have a ton of people to talk about television, or you just cannot get enough of some of these awesome shows like Vikings, Better Call Saul, Westworld, Game of Thrones, even The Walking Dead, and some other random shows that just pop up here and there. If you cannot get enough of all those programs and you want to talk about them, jump on over, join in the live motherfucking chat with some of the best people in the world that all share their thoughts real time whenever we go live. So if you subscribe to the YouTube channel, you follow the YouTube channel by clicking that little bell thing, you can find out anytime we go live. You can also check out issuesprogram.com for a backload of all of our stuff and check out our podcast on Stitcher, iTunes, and lots of other places. Huge thanks to all of you, and hope you check it out and hope you enjoy it. And I'll talk to you guys next time.
Konnichiwa, my bastards and wenches, and welcome to another edition of One-on-One. I am your host, Devin Borgo, a.k.a. your King Baby Duck. And first off, joining me, helping out with this interview, is our good buddy...
Handalicious from the Land of Ash. Hey, guys! So I guess it's two-on-one.
Yes, it is two-on-one. That is true, that's true. Although, technically, we are still under the umbrella of Ash, so technically it's still one-on-one.
Yeah, that's true, that's true.
Yes, but enough about that. Today, I'm very excited because joining me today... Well, rather, joining us today...
Besides me.
Yes, besides you. Sorry. Joining us today is Adi Slipak from Gather Round Games, who has brought forth a crazy concoction of a card game that Pandalicious and I went super crazy over at Boston Festival of Indie Games, and that title is known as Someone Has Died.
Oh, my goodness. Like... BFIG is, like, my favorite place to go. Like, I've enjoyed it since its birth, like, 4 or 5 years ago. And it seems like Ash has always kind of been, like, that little truffle pig that finds, like, that little nugget of truffle gold in tabletop. And this year was no different. So wow, Adi. Like, what a game.
I'm just sitting here and just, like, blushing to myself. I realized at some point I probably should have started talking.
It's okay. Don't worry about it. Sorry. We're just praising you so much that you're speechless. It's all right. It's all cool.
Yeah, I don't know what to do with myself.
Well, so let's get to the meat and the potatoes of all this. Because, I mean, I know you guys are out at IndieCade over this weekend, or past weekend, technically, when this comes out. So, like, we don't want to keep you from, like, getting on your plane and making your flights and getting there.
Don't worry about it.
But thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us about your game.
My pleasure.
I mean, I think you and I had, like, a really nice connection at BFIG, like, that connection not exactly established, and then that hunt down. Like, it was very dramatic. Like, I wish other people had seen it happen.
Almost find this game.
It was a total, like, because you guys kept trying to come in and there were people at our table and I was like, no, they want to play so bad.
It's like, oh no, we are so popular that we have to turn people away.
Oh no.
We're like the little match girl. Come on, let us play. Let us play, please. Please. It's so cold.
So going right into the first question, and I mean, you're probably through the millions of interviews that I imagine that you've had since BFIG, or maybe even before.
Oh, yes, of course, millions.
But I imagine you get, like, the staple question, you know, tell us about how Someone Has Died, like, came into existence. Because I cannot imagine that it was as simple as you and Liz, your co-creator, just sitting one day and you're like, you know what, we should laugh about death. Let's make a game. Like, I can't imagine it was that simple. Like, it had to have been, like, an amalgam of circumstances and someone saying the right thing at the right time. So, like, I kind of want to know about how that happened.
Yeah, well, so for everyone who wasn't at BFIG, Someone Has Died is an improvised will arbitration game. And the way it works is that one person plays the estate keeper who runs the estate. They get to decide who died, how they died, and what they left behind, and usher the rest of the players through the experience until the end where they decide who to give the fortune to. Everyone else gets a hand of cards from which they build characters and have to argue for why they deserve the fortune the most. So your standard card game. And the way it came about is that was actually, it was a class assignment. And at that point, Liz was not involved. She was just my very good friend in college and still is my very good friend after college, obviously. Mm-hmm. And I made the game with our other, we have a third team member, Ellie, who we were in this class together and we were pitched. It was a game design class at Wesleyan University. We were pitched the prompt of creating a social game. And we were kind of given Mafia and Werewolf as examples.
Oh.
And we
love Werewolf.
Yeah. Mm. We sat for at least 2 hours just thinking of what to possibly do for this assignment because we kept getting stuck on Werewolf and Mafia. Like, how do you do anything that's not Werewolf and Mafia? And in those two games, people are dying round after round. And eventually, one of us came up with the idea to start with the dead person. And the idea of a will arbitration pretty shortly followed.
Wow. Because, I mean, it's such a you know, heavy topic. And, I mean, most games today, like digitally, and even some tabletop games that deal with death, you know, like you've got your dreads where it's like there's some hope you may make it out. But, like, you know, the game master in that scenario wants to kill you and they're trying to find every opportunity to kill you. And then Ten Candles, which was also at BFIG, is like, oh, no, you guys are all dead at the jump. Like, there's no hope for you. Like, don't even look at these candles. They are not representations of the hope. It's all gone. So, I mean, you tend to get, like, this very polarizing, dark tone with death. And I feel like Someone Has Died, you know, while we're not making fun of death, we are having fun with death. I think, and that's what kind of makes it.
It's more making fun of. It's more making fun of the people who sometimes come out of the woodwork when somebody has died.
Right. So, like, I feel like we are dealing with the aftermath of Ten Candles. Like, everyone's dead, and then there are some people left behind who have an opportunity to take a person's stuff, and it's a little cold in a way, but. I think we compensate.
It's kind of like the aftermath of the game Clue. Now that we found out who killed Mr. Body, now we can figure out who's going to get all of his stuff.
Right, exactly.
So, I mean, but, oh gosh. And, like, the hilarity that ensues, listeners, is really kind of depending on who you're playing with. Like, if you're playing with, like, a core group of your friends who know you inside and out, like, it's going to be that 45-minute game that is going to leave your stomach hurting. Like, I remember walking away from this
game. Your guys' game was impeccable.
Thank you.
Like, my husband takes a lot of credit for that. He was the baker with us that day.
You were the robot with feelings. I was the voice actor.
That's right. And I mean, but I like how you give the players, the ones who are trying to, you know, inherit the estate, you know, you give them just enough character that, you know, they have to keep all that in mind. And it's like, okay, so I have to play this to this extent. And, like, you think that's enough, but guys, that's not even everything that happens. Because the will arbitrator has these objection cards that, you know, they can pass out if they hear something amusing that they happen to like in your storytelling of how you know the deceased or how you interact with the other characters. And these objections can potentially, actually most likely, will hurt you and your case for whatever you're trying to, like, get. And, like, I kind of like that there's this element of unknown surprise that you have to kind of, like, navigate into your story and make it work. And I mean, I like how some of them were, you know, faults in your story or how you actually know the deceased or their actual, like, physical things that then you have to do.
Yeah, like, the objections range in kind of, like, severity. Some of them are kind of wrenches that you throw into another person's story. And some of them are kind of, like, really inane and and just something that the other person didn't expect. Like, it'll be like, your mouth is full of peanut butter, which doesn't affect anyone's argument at all, aside from the fact that maybe it's a little harder to talk depending on how much they're committing.
And they won't be able to answer the question of who killed Alexander Hamilton.
Oh my gosh. I would want to play that card for that scenario. That would be great. Because then I would actually get peanut butter and do that physically. Then there wouldn't be any improv. It would be actual theater.
Secrets, exclusive, is that Liz has a dream of putting an identity card that is Alexander Hamilton into the deck.
Really?
Oh my god. Exclusive, guys. Look at that. We're getting all the juicy details here.
The flavor text for that currently is just,
he told me not to throw away my shot.
No, it's just, my name is Alexander Hamilton, which is also a lyric.
That is. It is. Great homages there. Great homages.
Broadway expansion pack. I'm all in for that.
I mean, literally walking away from, I think, the table, both Evan and I were literally like, so we're both kickstarting this, right? Yeah? Yeah, done. Okay, great. Moving on. Like, there was no way.
I kickstarted it right then and there. Like, as soon as we walked away, I pulled up the Kickstarter app. Boom. I even told my buddy from Wicked Anime, and he has also backed it as well.
Oh, wow. Thank you.
I mean, it's just so much fun. And I mean, I think right now, and I'm not trying to get topical and like, oh God, the world's going to shit. But I mean, like, I'm not going to lie about that either. So, you know, sometimes you just really need a good laugh. And someone has died really gives that to you hand over, like rigor mortis fist. And like, you kind of can't help but appreciate that. So you actually kind of already stumbled into my second question, because me and Evan certainly know how at least the first round of Someone Has Died plays, because I think the demo really only gave you the establishment of your character, the introduction of some objections, and then the will arbitrator asking questions to the people who have shown up. But you talked, I think, briefly with us that there are two other type of rounds that happen. So like, I'd like to talk a little bit about those to give a full idea of the full scope of the game.
Right. So just as a full overview, round one is the introduction. You use all of the four cards that you start with as your base and kind of introduce yourself and state an initial claim. Round two is the questioning round, where the estate keeper gets to ask one direct question of everyone at the table. And they have to use a new backstory card in answering that question. Round three is a recess round, where no new cards are drawn. And the idea for this is that kind of all the characters are sitting around taking a break for lunch, and they get to ask one question of one other person at the table. And that is, like, not everyone has to be asked a question. So, like, you can decide to either all gang up on one person, or you can spread the love equally, whatever kind of rises in the moment. And the last round is a final statements. So in round four, everyone draws another backstory card, and you kind of go around the same way you did in the first round and kind of try to convince the estate keeper for the last time that it should be you and not anyone else.
Okay. Because I like that there's a lot more involvement in this than your standard apples to apples or ka. Cool. And I mean, at first, when I think walking away from it, I was like, I feel like it's very approachable, very, very similar in terms of setup, like Ka, where you have like your judge and then you have your pool of anonymous, you know, contributors to the funny.
Right.
And I like how this is far more, you know, calculated, like, oh no, we're going to tell a really cool story here. If you guys are ready to get weird with me, because things are about to get weird.
You pegged it.
One of the games that I think I was telling you about that I was comparing it to was another game that I played at Boston Fig a couple years ago, one that I also backed on Kickstarter called By the Rights, where you try to pitch a movie with the cards that have been dealt with. But this one's more of creating a person rather than a movie.
Right, exactly. So what ultimately became the goal while we were creating this game was to make an accessible role-playing, almost, because we wanted to create the opportunity to create stories and to really build characters. And like, Liz and I both have pretty limited experiences with RPGs like Dungeons & Dragons and Fate. And I think a lot of that is because it's a little very intimidating to get into it. Like, you kind of like spend an entire day setting up your character, and then you like commit to meeting once a week, every week, and like, you don't have anything to really go off of when you're playing Dungeons & Dragons. You have a character sheet, but like, everything is in your imagination, which is wonderful. I absolutely love it. but it's really intimidating to first-time players and for people with not a lot of time on their hands and et cetera, et cetera. So we wanted to really marry the accessibility of games like Apples to Apples of Cards Against Humanity or whatever, where you sit around and play it over drinks and it's pretty short. But we did really want to give people a chance to build characters potentially for the first time. So you absolutely pegged it the way you were talking about it, which just makes me glow with pride. That,
like, well, I mean, if we caught that, but I'm sure everybody else who sat down with you probably walked away with the exact same, oh man, like this is totally something I could just have in like my bag, or I could bring, like, it's too bad. Like, it's too bad that, you know, like this did not come out by like last B-Fig, because like I'm going to like a 3-day game board game party this weekend. And I would totally be like, guys, this is what we should play like right now. Like, I'm probably going to be talking about it all weekend to all of them and showing all of these people, because there's about 60 of them who will be there. And I'm like, you need to get this. Get this right now.
There's a free print and play on itch.io of a prototype, which you could, if you fancy, download and print out.
And I don't have anything to do tomorrow besides work. No,
so you should totally do that, Panda.
I think I just might, just to give them a taste of how fun and addictive this game is. So moving right along. So you said that this was a class assignment that just kind of turned into something substantial. So its first iteration was always going to be a card game, or had it always kind of, was it going to be something else potentially? Like, I think I was reading in your stretch goals, which I'm going to get to my Kickstarter question in a second, because I got a couple of those. I saw that you guys were thinking about making like a core book, very similar to like what you guys would see like with Dread and Ten Candles and stuff like that.
Right. That's kind of our big, our super stretch goal, really, because we hit our goal a lot faster than we expected, and all our stretch goals as well, and people were like, more, and we're like, no, like, what do you mean more? We're not prepared. And so we sat and thought about it and was like, okay, what could we do aside from like making it prettier or like adding more cards or whatever that would really make the game a better experience? And we came up with this idea of like a handbook to kind of, again, help bridge that gap between social games and RPGs. And the book would have a cheat sheet for the estate keeper to help get started and to help come up with ideas. It would include a character sheet, probably a very basic one.
I think that's neat. Like, yeah, the whole character sheet concept thing, especially if you're really trying to marry these two concepts of games. I mean, like, I'm currently obsessed with like Dread and Ten Candles, where I'm like, oh man, I want to make character sheets. I want to see what people will give me for me to like throw back at them. And I feel like it actually might help, especially in the few beginning rounds of a game, for like players who are coming new to this to be able to, like, oh yeah, I said I was this, and like this was my motivation. So then until they feel comfortable enough to be like, you know what, I can just do this on the fly now because I'm an expert.
Right.
Like, I feel like that's such a great thing.
I've been talking a lot about beginning players because it's a big thing that we're focusing on, but it also we tried to keep the rules of the game as flexible to fit kind of people of any range. So like if you are a very skilled dungeon master, or even something as simple as like if you have a better idea for the deceased than whatever identity card you draw, like go with your better idea. Like, we don't care. We just want you to use the core to tell the best story and to have as much fun as possible. So for us, the handbook it would be digital, but it is a more physical encouragement to do that, to take liberties and to build on.
I think people will completely take liberties with that book. So since we're already talking about the Kickstarter, like, obviously congratulations for, one, not only making your goal, but then kind of essentially doubling it. And I think the last time I saw, you guys were like over 184% over And I was like, wow, it's just growing like wow, a chia pet. And I'm like, this is
like a chia pet. That's exactly how it's growing.
Well, yeah. Well, I look at it like, you know, like here's this idea you guys have. It's got some legs. That's great. And like you put your little seeds on it and you put water on it and you're not too sure what's going to happen. And then like the next day, it's like a full bush and you're like, whoa, where did that come from? Like you're like, wow, I didn't know I was that great at gardening. Like, look out, Earth, here I come. And
that is the best analogy I've heard for this so far.
But I mean, it's not even my entity, and I'm like super stoked and like excited for you guys. But like, what was that like to like put this out there and be like, we hope somebody likes it, and like people are like, take my money, like take it right now. Like, what is that like?
It's very surreal. Definitely we didn't expect it at all. And I think we got very lucky in that we had the opportunity to go to PAX West the week before we launched. And that really gave us the audience boost and the industry support that we really needed in order to like have enough people talking about it online, have enough people knowing that it exists. Yeah, I don't know how to describe it aside from saying that it's really surreal because it's not it because it's all sort of on the computer and we don't see everyone who's backing it. Like, it's not like it becomes very emotional and real when like I have conversations like this, or when like at BFIG we had people who we've never met before or that we like had met at PAX East like 6 months prior. We had a couple people come up to us and be like, we funded your Kickstarter, we're so excited. And I'm like, what? how did you know? What? I don't understand.
Word of mouth.
Yeah, no, it's really, like, that's when it becomes insane and, like, unbelievable. Like, otherwise, it's like numbers on a screen that don't make sense.
It certainly does make sense, because you clearly had the winning formula, and it just, the premise is just so clean cut, and you leave it up to whoever's playing the game to have the most fun. So like, clearly you're not railroading anybody. You're not forcing people to have to go down this certain point, which, I mean, like I said, I'm not dissing Dungeons and Dragons. I go to Pathfinder every Tuesday with my ranger. Like I do it. And like, I completely understand that feeling. Cause I mean, through my character creation, I'm like, here I am putting all this emotional backstory behind her. And like, I just, you know, learning the core mechanics of that game were probably where my weaknesses were, but I'm like, guys, I'm like, I am totally lawfully good. I'm like, so no matter whatever we do, like if it's not to the good of the people, I do not want to be involved. Like people got really annoyed with me because I was playing so true to my character's alignment.
I think I was lawful good too when I played.
And I think that was the safest bet because I'm just like, I'll just do what the right person, the good annoying person in every movie will do. And they'll all hate me, which is exactly what happened. And but I mean, like, I feel like if this game, Someone Had Died, had been out, like, I think, one, I would be like, all right, I don't have to be as involved personally with this character. I can, like, take a breather because I would have been able to get it all out here and not have to bring it to my Tuesday night role-playing.
Well, you committed to your robot pretty stingently, I have to say.
I try, but I mean, my husband's far more funnier than me. And I totally hate to admit that because his ego is already big.
Did he win the game?
No, I think you gave the robot all the high tech stuff so that
you
I could
gave
build
me the bear
companion.
Traps.
Right.
And you were hoping that my programming would allow me to share the rest of it with the baker because I was weirdly still invested in into the baker, even though I was now growing weird feelings for the deceased. And
it was so hard to choose between you guys. I had an existential crisis trying to.
Oh my gosh! Well, I appreciate that because we're always constantly battling for people's laughs.
Yeah,
like it's part of our marriage every day. But getting back to the Kickstarter, because I mean, and I'm just gonna say it. I totally backed $100 because one, I'm looking forward to this obituary. Like the minute I saw the goals, like I went between the fifth, I think it was like 54 and 100, and I was like, do I do this one or do I get an obituary that I could randomly hang up that people be like, why do you have an obituary for your death? They're like, because I'm awesome. And now I know what people will say about me when I die.
I came from the future.
Like, the types of things you guys are giving in your tier rewards, which I call tier swag, because it's like, oh man, what swag am I walking away with on top of the awesome game that I'm investing in? I mean, I was dying over, I think, the doll that people could cry into their tears. I think there's like a mini coffin I think I saw as a box option, which I'm like, wow.
Yeah, really our highest there. Option is a wooden coffin box.
Like, whoa, man. Like, I'm so perplexed over it. Like, I thought it was ingenious. I'm like, what a great way to reinvest the interest in the whole thing. And I was just like, wow. I'm like, if these guys don't take off, then there is something wrong with this planet, and I don't want to live here anymore.
Okay, Professor Farnsworth.
I don't like planes, but I'll get on a rocket. Like,
now, you backed the 100 one. I backed the $32 one because I found out if you backed the $32 one because it reached this tier, you will also get the Not Safe for Work expansion pack.
Oh, correct. I'm glad you brought this up.
And I need to know, like, what are some of the most insane things that you're going to be coming up with for this dirty deck? Because here's what's making me laugh, is that you have the picture of the guy with peanut butter in his mouth to symbolize dirty deck. And I'm like, what if that's not peanut butter?
Oh, no.
Oh, man. It's definitely peanut butter.
Okay, good.
In my mind, I just wanted to show off as much of the card art that we currently had as possible. So I tried to, like, associate them. I mean, I guess I'm glad your mind made that connect. I'm glad it worked for the purposes.
Sorry.
But no, it was peanut butter. I thought of it more as like a sensor, because like he can't talk, like it's full of peanut butter.
Oh, I got you.
But to each their own.
I knew it was the peanut butter guy, but it was like, what if it's like insinuating something? But like, so what?
Perhaps
are, yes. So crazy ideas that you have for the dirty deck. If you're able to share with us, what are some of the ideas you might have for it?
So we're hoping to sort of run the gambit of interpretations of dirty. So we have some like kind of like classier ideas where they're like, we have a Georgia O'Keeffe painting that we really want to include. Just because, I mean, they're very Yannick in nature. Do we have many smarter ones? I feel like...
I mean, that is very, like, highbrow, like, oh my, yes.
See, that might be the only highbrow one we've come up with so far, though. The rest of them are just, like, explosive diarrhea.
Oh my gosh. Like,
I mean, so we have, like, that side of dirty. We're hoping to have some, like, sexy ones, too. Ooh.
Well, I mean, I think you had said, like, when you were establishing the relationship, it's like, guys, none of you guys are, like, secret lovers to the deceased, okay? Like,
correct. Because we always, that is one of the, we want people to be as adventurous with this game as possible, but we do tell people not create relationships between themselves and the deceased that don't come up in the cards, because then everyone just tries to be their lover.
It happens
without fail. Every time we forget to mention that detail, someone does it. Astounding.
The like, coffin can't handle the pressure of all you people crying over it, okay?
So some of the backstory cards kind of encourage you to interact with the people sitting next to you. So, like, it could be, like, you had a one-night stand with the person to your right, which could be another character, or it could be the estate keeper. It could be... Oh, we have one of the ones that I like that we came up with. And I mean, none of this is guaranteed to be in the game. So like, if it's not, don't like sue me. Right?
Don't cry any tears, guys. Or do, because someone has died.
Right. So like you barfed on the person next to you, like at a bar mitzvah, or maybe that was a relationship card. I can't remember, but barf at a bar mitzvah is the key phrase. And then, like, we want to do that stupid thing where, like, we have a handful of earthworms as, like, a backstory card because it's physically dirty.
Oh, I gotcha.
So, yeah.
Yeah, so it's dumb, like, we got, like, a bell curve here. Like, a bell curve of dirty. Yeah.
Right. We have the super lowbrow, like, gross stuff, and then we have some, like, poop jokes, and then we get to Georgia O'Keeffe. Like, we want to do the whole range of dirty.
I mean, no matter what ends up coming out in the Not Safe for Work deck, I totally think people are going to just eat it up. Like, I really, I really do.
I also. So,
now, I know you went to Twitter to ask about expansion packs. What were some of the other ideas you had for expansion packs?
Definitely a pop culture deck was second place, which would have been awesome. And I think we might try to incorporate some of that just like into the additional cards that we have to add to the base now.
Right.
Just because that's always fun. And the other one might have been, I know we had discussed holiday decks for a while, but I don't know if that's what made it into the Twitter poll.
Okay, cool.
It escapes me now. I mean, the ones we were most excited about were the Not Safe for Work and Pop Culture. And one of those ended up winning, and we were like, great, going to do that.
So what have been some of your highlights with bringing Someone Has Died on the Road?
Wow, that is a great question. Well, like I said, I mean, the experience of meeting someone who had heard about the game either from someone else who we met or from the internet or whatever it is like mind-blowing every time. Because like in my mind, it's not quite like the school project that it started out as, but it's still like it's a thing that's kind of been my weird little baby for so long that like I've just been showing my friends and like slowly more and more people. When you meet so many people at a convention, it doesn't like the impact isn't immediately apparent. Like it's apparent when people have a great reaction to the game. I mean, that's really what it is sitting down with a new person. And either they come in skeptical and then like have a blast at the end, or they're psyched the whole time. It's those personal experiences that make it really exciting.
Very cool.
And we've also had, I'm trying to think. At PAX East back in March, we had the opportunity to meet the Take This organization, which is a wonderful charity that sets up AFK rooms. Don't ask me what that stands for. I have no idea.
Away from keyboard.
Oh, thank God. Now I know.
I love those rooms because I mean,
my favorite. They're amazing. So like, it was like this exhibitor party or whatever that they invited. So we have been going to conventions mostly through Indie Mega Booth, which is a really cool thing that like takes indie games that can't afford to go by themselves and helps them subsidize the cost and go in a big group, which is really fun. And it was like an exhibitor party that Take This was hosting. We're like, okay, we'll go. And it ended up being just like a super chill thing with bean bags and nachos.
Oh my God, yes.
It was amazing. And we got to talk to one of the doctors who worked there. And it's such an amazing organization that provides. So like if you're having a panic attack at a convention or you just need to talk to someone and chill out, you need to sit and color. This party was literally like nachos, bean bags, and coloring.
Nice.
Which is my ideal party. And so we got to chat with them a little bit, and they like kind of got excited about the game and said that they would play it with some of the kids that they work with. They work with autistic children, and they thought that despite the theme, that it would be a really great exercise for them in practicing flexibility of thought. And this was like an application for the game that we had never even thought of. We were like, okay, maybe like you can learn to do improv with it, but you can't like teach like forgive my brushes, but like real skills.
I think it would approach it as here's this social element that they may not be aware of right off of the bat and like have to, you know, navigate that. So like it could be a great opener for that and also help them just get, you know, get some of that energy out or like learn how to redirect that energy. So like I could see where like if they're reaching very faintly, how that could potentially work. But like in the right cases where it would, like I could see that being a benefit or something fun, a fun, entertaining thing that they could do. They could.
Yeah. And I mean, that was like a really cool to have someone else see value in the game in a way that we didn't initially see was like really gratifying on like so many levels.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's like,
that's awesome.
Really deep.
Did I go too far? I went too far.
No. But it's just like, wow. It's like my silly game could like help people. I could, you know, potentially, maybe, but either way,
on a very small scale, but like still, and I mean, even the way you said, like, if it's just like making people laugh, like at like a weird time, then that's awesome.
Laughter is like the best medicine for some people. Some people just don't know how to laugh.
Yeah.
So I'll try to make my serious question less serious, but I did kind of want to pick you and Liz's brain about this. So the whole gaming, you know, industry and the culture and the society, primarily, and I'm using asterisks, it's italicized, it's underlined, you know, was like a sausage fest. Like, no offense, sure. Evan.
No, and I'm like, taken.
You know, and I mean, like, me and my sister have been doing the, you know, our Electric Sister podcast for like over 11 years, you know, and we're
POC. So.
Thank you. And, you know, and we're POCs and we're women of color and we're like, we're here in the industry, whether you like it or not. And accept us. And most people are like, you're cool. So, like, it's fine. Whatever. Small battles.
Yeah.
But I love to talk to other women in the industry who are like obviously on the different side, on the different line than me and my sister are. And I'm just wondering if, you know, throughout this whole development, you know, from who you've said has been involved in this, this seems to have been primarily female, you know, yeah, concepted, you know, built up and all of that. And I am curious if you guys have ever kind of hit that wall where, like, you know, that oppressive, not so accepting energy, and I'm not saying masculine because that's not necessarily what I mean, sure, but if you've met that kind of stiffness in approach when you've talked to other developers who are making card, you know, card games, yeah, or tabletop games,
like the mansplainers.
Sure. Sort of, but like I said, I'm not trying to man bash, but, you know, I just want to hear another woman's perspective in their journey in the industry because they're all different. And I mean, I'm not saying that mine has always been great, but it's not always been terrible either. And I'm just curious about what your experience is being a lady in the, yeah, industry who's made this wonderful thing, like what your experiences have been.
Absolutely. Yeah. So since the game has left the classroom, we are an exclusively woman team. Not because we actively tried to be, but just because we ended up just being three girls who are making a thing, which, and I'll start by saying that we've been incredibly lucky, to meet 99% like super accepting and like wonderful people, who have been helpful in all the right ways. And we've gone to two conventions, like, so at PAX East and PAX West, we were the only completely woman developer team. There were a couple of other women on co-ed teams working in various capacities, but we were the only all-woman team out of 16 teams and of tabletop people. I don't know what the video game situation was, but and we forgot. We didn't realize until we left that we were in a very testosterone-heavy environment. And PAX East was a little more divided in terms of the gender split, but also a wonderful experience. We have had a handful of instances where either, I'm trying to think of, like, actual experiences. Like, I've gone into a playtesting room and, like, felt entirely like I was not being taken seriously because
that's a damn shame. Those guys missed out.
Yeah. And I mean, I don't know if it was an age thing or a gender thing or an experience thing. Cause I mean, this was a playtest group that like meets fairly regularly. And I showed up for the second time in like 3 months and then was like, play this silly game. Meanwhile, they're all playing like really they're creating very strategy heavy stuff and they're kind of like asking each other for opinions and I'm kind of sitting there because they're not asking me for anything. There were also, we had one bonkers experience, and this is not even in the gaming, like it is in the gaming space, but we've had, so we were sitting in Seattle. We were sitting, I tell the story because I think it's really funny now in retrospect, but we were sitting in a cafe, me and Liz, and we're working, and we're being at like a normal, maybe slightly above average cafe volume, and there's a gentleman sitting next to us who overhears what we're talking about, and we're planning budgeting. This is like right before the launch. And he's like, are you guys like making a Kickstarter? Like for a thing? And so, okay, we entertain him for a little bit. We like tell him a little bit about it. He's asking a lot of questions and also like Googling on the side and like telling us things like, oh, you know, if you print with this person, it's like $5 a month. I was like, okay. We're working, please leave us alone. Then I proceed to realize that I've lost my wallet.
Ooh.
And I go into a frenzy where I'm like patting myself, I'm walking around the thing. And this guy keeps giving us advice as I'm patting myself looking for my wallet.
Oh my
I'm like, one. And at one point I asked him like, oh, are you also like in the game? And he's like, no, I'm not in the gaming industry.
Don't mind me, have no experience in this, but I know I can give you guys the advice that you need to succeed.
Right, like I'm while here. You're also about to cry because your wallet is missing.
Oh so, my goodness.
I mean, that
read,
is...
Read the room, guy, read the room.
It was hilarious. It was, and then, so I found my wallet, and then we wanted to continue working, so we're like, oh, God, we have to go back into this cafe. We ended up sitting, like, across the room from him. Like,
oh, my goodness.
Avoiding him.
I mean, at least that has, like, a whimsical spin. Like, at least it wasn't like, I have your wallet. Like, at least it wasn't, like, cringeworthy.
Yeah.
He stole the wallet.
That could have gone really bad.
That would have been so hilarious.
No one got naked. It's all good. It's all okay.
That's the furthest gambit of things that we've experienced. Like, either kind of people taking some time to warm up, or, I mean, maybe not warming up, and, like, that's fine, that's their loss. But like I said, overall, it's been pretty wonderful. The people I've met in the gaming industry are some of the nicest that I've met in my life.
That warms that's my fantastic. Heart to hear. Because it's like, don't anyone ever be mean. This is an awesome game. Like, don't let me hear that someone's bashing it, because then I'll have words.
No, I'm trying to, no. I mean, sure, we've had people who, like, we give the pitch to them, and they're, like, either, like, not for me, or they're, like, too close to home right now, I need to leave. And we're like, okay,
right.
Wow. Please leave.
Go find an AFK room.
Yeah, right.
Take exactly. a minute.
But
no, I'm really glad to hear that, because obviously, like, if something is innovative, approachable, like, infectiously charming, like, I could sit here all day and give you so many descriptors of how your game made me feel and how fun it was. Aww. Like, people are going to get real annoyed with me talking about someone who's died. And, like, they're going to think I had something to do with it. And I'm like, and I clearly didn't. But, like, it's so wonderful. Like, it's so good. Like, and I'm not even trying to be, like, fake girl about that. I'm so, no. Like, it's legit good.
It's a party starter. It's going to get a lot of people laughing and enjoying themselves. It's going to be fun for many hours.
Like, it's got such replayability. The stories are always going to be different and fresh depending on who you're playing with. Like, it's endless. The fun is endless. So,
you guys.
So let's wrap it up, because I actually am very surprised that we took this much time. But there is a Kickstarter out there.
Cut it down in post.
but there is a Kickstarter out there. By the time this interview goes out, I think there'll be about 3 days left to the Kickstarter. So, like, we're at the tail end of it.
If it's Tuesday, it'll be two.
So...
so we'll tell our listeners to shake their tail feathers to back the Kickstarter.
And I mean, if you're going to be at Indiecade out there in LA, because we do have some LA fam out there, if you're listening, if you are,
hit up that Indiecade and go out there. Just experience games, period. But if you can get a chance to experience someone who's died, do it. Just do it.
Well, besides Indiecade, where else will people be able to find someone who's died?
Well, around New York, we will definitely be doing events. We will be at Playcrafting's October Spookfest play thing.
Oh, of course.
Oh, nice.
But it's some sort of, they do like mini conventions around the city, to help again, to like give indie developers kind of a bit of a spotlight, and, that we're very grateful to that organization. They've been very good to us. And yeah, we'll be there ideally with, some new cards to try out, 'cause we're going to need to be playtesting all the new cards that we have to make. So we'll probably be at, NYU Game Center as well, playtesting there. And I mean, the best way to find out where we are is to follow us on social media. We're on Facebook and Twitter at Someone Has Died.
Excellent.
Plug, plug, plug.
Yes.
All the plugs.
All the plugs.
Plugs.
It was pretty seamless, though. No, that was pretty good.
Yes. That was very good. So please, listeners, go on to Kickstarter. Go back. Someone Has Died. Last couple days to do so. Super amount of fun. It made Boston Fig a much memorable experience playing this game. It was a ball. And I, for one, cannot wait to own this game and bring it to my friend's house and play it. It's going to be awesome.
I would say get it while it's hot, but I mean, someone has died. So clearly, get it while it's cold.
Oh, no.
But Adi, it has been so great being able to talk to you, laugh with you, pick your brain a little bit.
This was a blast.
I'm so glad that we were able to make this work after such an arduous experience. Yes. Coming together into such a beautiful, beautiful, you know, experience and time. So thank you so much, Evan. Obviously, of course, like, always love when we can get you in the mix, because
absolutely
you bring the fun.
Well, technically, you're on my show right now. So.
I am. You're not going to try to sign off your show. You take it away. This is all you.
Yes. So, listeners, thank you once again for listening to this special episode of One-on-One for Someone Has Died. And please, go back it on Kickstarter. Adi, thank you so much for joining us here.
And thanks for having me.
You are welcome. And until next time, this is your King Baby Doc Evan Borgo.
And this is Fandalicious from the Electric Sisterhood Podcast.
And as always, we like to remind you that you don't have to be from Boston to be a bastard. But it sure helps.
Come on, let's get complicated. Born and dangerous, don't